The DC Music Census is now live. Led by the DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities, the DC Music Census is an initiative that collects data from music industry professionals about the DMV's music economy, allowing the district to make informed decisions in supporting the music ecosystem. The census is anonymous and designed for anyone working within the music industry. Members of the music community may take the census by visiting dcmusiccensus.org. That's dcmusiccensus.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. It's 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. I'm having a good old time. Just celebrated a birthday Wednesday. That's right. May Day, International Workers' Day. Perfect day for a brother like me to be born, a revolutionary-minded kind of fella. International Workers' Day. The universe just said, it's Garland's day to be born, and here I am. If you want to find me online, I'm on Telegram. You can find me on Facebook, just plain old Garland Nixon, garland.nixon on Instagram. And I'm available to be emailed, garlandn, that's Garland and the first letter of my last name, which is Nixon at gmail.com. So I'm going to talk about the protest. Got plenty to talk about that. But first, I'm going to take just a few minutes. You know, people, when I turn on the TV, I never trust things. You know, people know me. It's like, hey, you know, I'm just a person. No trust for the government, no trust for the mainstream media. I lost all trust in the mainstream institutions. And if you've been paying any attention to the news lately, yeah, they're like, yeah, these terrible anti-Semitic protesters must be stopped. They're evil. Okay. And every now and then, I just like to reach back to something and say, eh, you know what I mean? Eh, right? So when I was an investigator, one of the things that we worked with was timelines, right? If there was a crime or something happened, you look at a timeline. Where were you at this time, that time, this time, that time? A person says, I was here. Could he have gotten from there to the crime scene in that amount of time? Blah, 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 right? So I'm just going to, before I get into the protest, just an example of why I, at some point, lost all trust in the government in this system. In case you haven't figured it out, it's crumbling, but why? Okay, talk about COVID. I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to conspiracy theory. I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to give you some documentation. And I want you to use your deductive reasoning to figure out if this timeline makes sense. Okay, throw this timeline at you and just tell me what sense it makes. Let me start it here. A little bit of background. Here's a document from 2002. It is at the virtual library for the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs. And here's a document in 2002, right? Way back in 2002 from Dr. Anthony Fauci. Most people don't know one of the things that Dr. Anthony Fauci was doing back then was working with biodefense, with the Department of Defense. Biodefense. What is biodefense? Well, they call it defense. Just like the Department of Defense, you know, like they're defending themselves in Gaza right now, that we go around the world. You know how we defended ourselves in Libya and we defended ourselves in Iraq and we defend ourselves all over the world. We defended ourselves in Vietnam and Afghanistan. You know how the U.S. defends itself? We go to another country and we kill other people. It is the Department of Offense, but we call it the Department of Defense, right? Well, that's how our biodefense program works. It consists of creating all kinds of terrible, horrible, unthinkable diseases and viruses, and then coming up with a vaccination or some cure for it. So you make a horrible virus, a horrible, evil, vicious, brutal, some kind of disease, and then you make a cure for it. And then you say, well, we're doing that just in case some other evil country does it, and then we'll have the cure. And we call that a biodefense program. It's really creating offensive biological weapons. Okay, Dr. Fauci was running that. And he wrote this document about getting increased funding for that. And I'll just read one sentence from that. Someone might genetically engineer a microbe and make it resistant to standard treatment. But if that trait is identified, another drug does not have to be created to counter it. So what he was saying then is, you know, somebody, we don't know who, could genetically engineer some kind of a virus or whatever, and then they'd have to be able to deal with it. Now, it's interesting that he said that because the people that he were working with very specifically genetically engineered viruses and stuff like that. So way back in 2002, he was involved with creating viruses and things like that, that would be biological weapons. That's what Dr. Fauci was involved with, right? Okay. Now, I'm going to read something to you. Again, timeline. This is from the CDC. This is from the Center for Disease Control. And it is Center for Disease Control Museum COVID-19 timeline. So what they're telling us is basically what happened when it appeared. Well, here's the beginning of the timeline. December 12th, 2019, a cluster of patients in China's Hubei province in the city of Wuhan began to experience the symptoms of an atypical pneumonia-like illness that does not respond well to standard treatments. Kind of like Dr. Fauci was talking about in that document where he said somebody could genetically engineer a microbe that wouldn't respond to standard treatments, huh? That's kind of weird that in 2002, he was running a program that genetically engineered microbes so that they wouldn't respond to standard treatments. So late December 12th, all of a sudden, according to the CDC, a bunch of patients show up in Wuhan, China, and they got some new weird virus, right? That's December 12th. Who could have seen that coming? You know what I mean? It was a pandemic that started on December 12th. Nobody knew that was going to happen, right? It just happened. It just happened out of the blue. According to what they're saying, December 12th, they're like, hey, there's some people, they're sick. What's wrong with them? It's not responding to anything. Oh, no, that turned out to be COVID. And thus was the pandemic. So according to the Center for Disease Control, according to our government, the pandemic started December 12th, 2019, right? It showed up and man, it's there. We got to deal with it. But let us go back a few months. Let us go back to September. Let's see. Let me find it. In September of 2019, an executive order was signed by President Donald Trump. Let me try to find it. And it was called, this is not the one I want. Give me a second. I'm going to actually bring it out. It was called Executive Order 13887, Modernizing Influenza Vaccines in the United States to Promote National Security and Public Health, right? Here's the interesting thing about that document. It had the word pandemic in it 18 times. And what that document was about, if you read it, this was September, right? October, November, December. This was 3 months, 3 months before the beginning of the pandemic, 3 months before this coronavirus showed up that nobody possibly knew would show up. You couldn't know what was going on. How would you know when some people just randomly showed up in Wuhan with it, right? It's just happened. But 3 months prior to that, an executive order was signed about modernizing influenza vaccines, right? And they say in this, a virus, a new influenza virus, it says, let me read it. Periodically, new influenza viruses emerge from animals, including birds and pigs, that can spread efficiently and have sustained transmission among humans. This situation is called an influenza pandemic. Unlike influenza, a pandemic has the potential to spread rapidly around the globe, infecting higher numbers of people and cause high rates of illness and death in populations that lack prior immunity. While it is not possible to predict when or how frequently a pandemic may occur, there have been four pandemics in the last 100 years, and they go on. And they go on to say, we've got to be able to make vaccines faster. These vaccines must be reformulated for each influenza season, as well as in the event of a pandemic. You go on. And they start talking about what they're doing, and they say, this approach is insufficient, their current approach, to meet response needs in the event of a pandemic, which can emerge rapidly and with little warning, because the market does not sufficiently reward speed, and because a pandemic has the potential. When you read this document, 3 months, do the timeline, September 19th. 3 months later, the CDC told us an organic and random pandemic started. But in September, they started pandemic response, right? Isn't that kind of weird? Isn't it odd that, what a strange coincidence that 3 months before a pandemic, an executive order was signed very specifically to respond to a pandemic. And he put together a task force, right, to prepare for a pandemic. The task force, I'm reading this to you. This is not conspiracy theory. I'm reading to you a White House record. The task force shall consist of a senior official from the following executive branch departments and agencies. Number one, the Department of Defense. Hold on. They're preparing for a pandemic, right? Wouldn't that be the Center for Disease Control? Wouldn't that be the National Institute of Health? Why in the dickens would you assign the Department of Defense to prepare for a pandemic that's going to start 3 months later that you don't know about? The Department of Defense. Now, let's remember, Dr. Fauci worked with the Department of Defense developing biological weapons. I am giving you no theories of what this means. I'm just saying Dr. Fauci worked with the Department of Defense in the Biological Weapons Division. I read a document from 2002 where he said, you know, if somebody creates a microbe, genetically engineers a microbe, we got to be able to deal with it really quick. 3 months prior to a pandemic that nobody could have possibly saw was coming, the government began preparation for a pandemic. And I'm reading the documentation to you. Isn't that odd? One of the things they're going to do is they're going to estimate the cost of expanding and diversifying domestic vaccine manufacturing capacity to use innovative, faster, and more scalable technologies, including cell-based and recombinant vaccine manufacturing through cost-sharing agreements with the private sector, which shall include an agreement upon pricing strategy during a pandemic. There was no pandemic. There was no even idea that there would be a pandemic. And they were talking about how they would handle price strategy during a pandemic. They will estimate the cost of expanding domestic production capacity of adjuvants in order to combine such adjuvants with both seasonal and pandemic influenza vaccines. They will estimate, this is the task force that they put together in September, 3 months before the pandemic. They will estimate the cost of expanding domestic fill and finish capacity to rapidly fulfill antigen and adjuvant needs for pandemic response. They do some other things that they say they're going to do, manufacturing, other domestic things, in advance of a pandemic in order to be able to ensure adequate domestic pandemic manufacturing capacity. When you look through this document, pandemic response, all over that document is pandemic response. So let me summarize this. 3 months before we are told, which is December, according to the Center for Disease Control, the document I just read, December 12th is when the coronavirus first showed up. I had no idea before December 12th that anything like that could possibly happen. And it just showed up, you know, with somebody ate some bats or something, I think they said. And how, you know, man, that's interesting. But 3 months earlier, they began pandemic response. 3 months before the pandemic started, the government started pandemic response. Let me go one further. There's another thing. They did something in October. So September 19th, Donald Trump signs an executive order that's all about creating vaccines for pandemic response. I just read that to you. That's from the White House documents. Here's a document from Johns Hopkins University, Center for Health Security and Visions. Okay, in Center for Health Security, Johns Hopkins University. They had a simulation exercise. And guess what it was called? Pandemic Simulation Exercise Spotlights Massive Preparedness Gap. Event 201, hosted by the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, envisions a fast-spreading coronavirus with a devastating effect. Let's do a timeline here. According to the Center for Disease Control, the pandemic started December 12th. No one had any idea it was going to start, no knowledge of it. It just happened. Somebody ate some bats, whatever. This new disease showed up. They didn't know anything about it. That's December 12th. If we go backwards to September, Donald Trump signed an executive order to begin response for a pandemic. Then we go to October, and Johns Hopkins hosted Event 201. Let me read from this document. The center's latest pandemic simulation, Event 201, dropped participants right in the midst of an uncontrolled coronavirus outbreak that was spreading like wildfire. 2 months before a coronavirus outbreak that spread like wildfire, Johns Hopkins University had a pandemic response simulation very specifically about a coronavirus that spread like wildfire. You don't have to believe me. You can look it up yourself. I'm reading here. Johns Hopkins University Health Security. Event 201, look it up, hosted by the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, envisions a fast-spreading coronavirus with devastating effect. 2 months before a fast-spreading coronavirus with devastating effect hit, devastating impact, they had a simulation of a fast-spreading coronavirus with devastating impact. And then they told us they had no idea it was going to happen. They had no clue. Oh, by the way, a coronavirus that was just wild. It came from bats. It just showed up out of nowhere. They put the guy in charge of it who had been working on bioweapons. They put the whole operation not under the Center for Disease Control, not under the National Institute of Health, under the Department of Defense. Now, if I said that while COVID was going on, you would have called me a crazy conspiracy theorist. But this is not even a conspiracy. I'm reading to you. I'm reading from the White House document, executive order, says, hey, let's do a pandemic response 3 months before the pandemic. I'm reading to you from Johns Hopkins University's health security website that says Event 201, hosted by Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, envisions a fast spreading coronavirus with devastating impact. I was an investigator. And I look at timelines. You ain't an investigator, probably. Does that make sense to you? Does it make sense to you that 3 months before a pandemic, the government starts pandemic response? 2 months before a pandemic, Johns Hopkins University has a simulation of a pandemic response for coronavirus. And then all of a sudden, we have a coronavirus pandemic. And they put the guy in charge of it who handled bioweapons for the Department of Defense. And the President of the United States puts the Department of Defense in charge of the whole operation. I am not going any further with that. That's evidence. That's information. I'm going to hand it to you. If I say what I'm thinking, you're going to say, well, Garland, you're a crazy conspiracy theory. Those are just coincidences. It's just a coincidence that 2 months before a coronavirus pandemic, they had a simulation simulating a coronavirus pandemic. Just coincidence, I'm sure. I wouldn't want to be a crazy conspiracy theorist and get laughed off of WPFW for saying crazy things. So why don't we just leave that there? And there are probably people who will listen to that and say, you know, I think I understand why Garland doesn't trust the government. I think I'm starting to get why maybe he doesn't trust these people about anything. Why when they tell me, Garland, your enemy is in Iran, they're evil. Your enemy is in Venezuela. Your enemy's in Cuba. Your enemy's in Russia. Your enemy's in China. Your enemy's in North Korea. I say, my enemy's on Capitol Hill. My enemy is on Wall Street. My enemy is in the military industrial complex, Lockheed Martin. Those are the people that are oppressing American citizens. The reason we can't get health care coverage is on Wall Street. The reason we can't get health care coverage for everybody, the reason we won't deal with the homeless, the reason we won't deal with our infrastructure is not in Russia or China or Iran or Cuba or Venezuela. It's right here. It's right here. Was it Iran who was holding coronavirus impact events just prior, conveniently 2 months before a coronavirus outbreak? One could look at that information and be quite suspicious, I would say. One could do that, couldn't one? Just throwing that out there. Perhaps I'm an idiot, a fool, a conspiracy theorist, but I can count. I can count to three, and I can count 3 months before a pandemic. They're preparing for one. 2 months before a pandemic, they hold a coronavirus pandemic exercise. Oh, can I read this to you? Let me read this. Okay, here's what we're going to do before I go any further. Callers, here's what I want you to do. Make sure you speak closely to the phone. Do not use a speakerphone. They don't sound well on the radio. Don't set the phone down and listen to the radio or computer and wait for me to call you. Hold the phone to your ear because we have a 10-second of the delay. And if the phone is not at your ear, I'll call you and you won't hear it for 10 seconds on the radio or the computer. So let's go. First caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Roland.
Talk to me, Roland.
Okay, great. The timeline, there's very important things that are not, that you haven't included that can help, I guess, broaden the picture, the scope of the problem. First off, it was called SARS-2 because we had already had a SARS-1 situation that hardly affected the U.S., but it was quite a scare, quite a pandemic. With the first round of SARS.
Yep.
Then there was another related coronavirus called MERS.
Yep.
MER.
Yep. Middle East killed a bunch of people. Yeah, it was a Middle Eastern one.
Right. And way back after 9/11, the feds already started looking at emergency response. And telling healthcare providers like hospitals and other kind of facilities that they had to start developing emergency preparedness plans, and it would include all kinds of problems like weather disasters. Mm-hmm. There could be man-made disasters. There could breaking ahead. There could be things like a pandemic, and so. I work for one of the local health departments, and we had periodic training exercises. And the health systems, regardless of what city or state you're in, they were all mandated to do periodic exercises. And some of them were like simulated live happening at the hospital. Sometimes it would just be called a tabletop activity. Mm-hmm. But in where I work, it was done voluntarily. I had signed up for a training for a simulated anthrax attack. And that wasn't too far before COVID. But thankfully, there wasn't an anthrax thing, but it was just an exercise.
Do you know who Bruce Ivins is? Dr. Bruce Ivins?
No.
Okay, just so you'll know. The anthrax thing when anthrax got mailed out and killed a bunch of people?
Absolutely.
And they said it came from, you know, the Middle East or terrorism or something like that. So what the government eventually said was it came from Fort Detrick in Maryland.
Up near Frederick, Maryland.
And that the guy who did it was a doctor named Bruce E. Ivins, I-V-I-N-S, right? So they said, hey, this guy did it. But you're going to find this shocking. Before anybody could talk to Bruce Ivins or, you know, find out his side of the story, he killed himself.
Right.
Shocking. Isn't it funny how that always happens? He killed himself. He killed himself. I'm not saying it anybody else, but it sure worked out convenient that once it came, that this anthrax that we were told was from Saddam Hussein or whatever came from free. How in the world does it get out of the bio lab? You know, they got cameras. They got everything. You can't sneak anything out of a bio lab unless you take it out on purpose. And the guy who was there committed suicide. Just a little tidbit of information. I got a bunch of callers waiting. I got to ask you to close.
Real quick, please, Garland, don't hang up on me.
Okay.
H1N1. Also, what's that horrible disease out of Africa that makes you bleed? Ebola.
Yes.
There was a whole series of health scares, and I know they were inoculating people with vaccinations for H1N1 as a kind of flu. Mm. And the worst thing I think that ever happened was that we had observers stationed working at those labs in China up until that orange madman took office. He canceled the contracts, pulled the people back, and it was a surveillance thing just to keep an American eye on what was going on in these labs.
Well, unfortunately, I certainly appreciate the call, but I got to jump because we got a bunch of calls. So thanks a lot, but I got a bunch of other calls.
Right.
I really need to get some other people. All right, next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Oh, I guess this guy must have set the phone down and he's listening through the radio or the computer, like I said, don't do, and he ain't going to hear this for 10 seconds. Let's go to the next caller. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Okay, turning off my radio. Hey, Gron, this is Kermit again. It's Sykesville, Maryland.
Hey, what's happening, Kermit?
Well, the federal government spent, I forget now if it was $11 billion or $13 billion to expand Fort Detrick, you know?
Yep.
Where they have what's called the anthrax building. They've never been able to get rid of all the anthrax. And there's a long history with Fort Detrick, which I can't go into, and other people in Maryland know better than me. Okay. But there were a lot of demonstrations, you know, before that money was actually appropriated that were in Frederick, you know, and all the different, you know, peace groups and anti-war groups and, left-wing socialist and communist groups were all trying to stop that from happening. There's a cancer cluster all around Fort Detrick because of everything they have dumped over the years. Zoonotic diseases, all the deforestation that's happening all over the world, is where, you know, all these, not just viruses, but bacteriological diseases that we have never encountered are coming from. There's an excellent book by a Yale doctor who actually, he contracted COVID-19 and he did okay. He was isolated in Italy when it was spreading really rapidly there. And also, I'm not sure if it was in Haiti or somewhere else, where the waterborne disease that comes from, you know, defecation in the water.
Cholera.
Exactly. He contracted that, studying that. Guy's name is Frank Snowden, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's a tome. It's about 3 inches thick, but at the beginning of COVID, Amy Gooden talked about, had him on the show, you know, and I said, man, I got to get that book. And, I mean, even it's a tome, it's 3 inches thick. You know, I got through it in less than a month, and I'm working full time. The thing is that the deforestation isn't just related to climate change. It's related to new diseases that we have never seen before. And I'll get off the air to take your comment. I got one more thing to say. Another excellent book besides Frank Snowden's is a book that's called Capitalism on a Ventilator.
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah.
I think I got it at home. The people who wrote it sent it to me.
Yeah,
it's really good.
I know
Sarah
Flounder's an old friend of mine from way back.
Yeah.
And an excellent journalist.
Yeah, thank you
very
much.
I'll let you go and take comments off the air. You have
yes.
a great day, Garland. Great show. Thank you.
Sam Husseini, a brilliant investigative journalist in this area, did a document where some work where he documented the what was it? You know, the disease that makes you bleed out in Africa, that they had the issue that they had a few years back in Africa. And basically what he said was hemorrhagic fever. Basically what he said was what's interesting is this. It happened in an area where the United States, the U.S. had a bio research lab, very specifically researching the hemorrhagic fever, right? And it happened in that area, and all of the locals said it came out of the lab, and the U.S. said, no, it didn't come out of the lab, right? So there's, you know, event after event, because they never found, you know, generally they can find like animals and, you know, patient one or what, they never found that. And the person that they said was patient one couldn't possibly have been. They said it was like an 18-month-old boy. He was the first one that died. And they said, yeah, he must have been in the woods playing with bats or playing with animals. And his parents said, he's only 18 months old. He's not allowed to go in the woods by himself. In Africa, for God's sake, he'd be eaten by something. No. So their argument of who patient zero, as they say, was, didn't even make sense. And all of the locals said, yeah, that came out of the lab. So there are... I tell you what, look up Lyme's disease. There's strong evidence that Lyme's disease, strong evidence. I'm not saying I know for sure. If you start researching yourself, you will find that the United States government was working on specific diseases that would transmit, that would be transmitted through ticks at the time that Lyme's disease kind of showed up. This is a very dangerous gain-of-function research. It's a very dangerous kind of research that happens because you create these superviruses, and if one gets loose, and some of them have, then you deal with this. I was just throwing out that really weird timeline where the government says a pandemic started in December 12th, and we didn't know anything about it. We had no idea it was going to start. But 2 months before that, they were holding simulations and exercises about what to do for a coronavirus pandemic. That's real suspicious. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
What's on, brother? Ken. From Virginia. How are you?
Great. What's happening, Ken?
Pleasure to speak to you. You know, it's ironic how, you know, they want to call people like ourselves conspiratorial in nature, when in fact it's just continue the investigation that was done prematurely, mm-hmm. or finished prematurely. No different if it was King, Kennedy, Lumumba, 9/11, whatever you would choose. But in particular, especially in COVID, the irony is not just the fact of how they presented it, but their actions thereafter. I decided not to get vaccinated because it's a choice. Distance and a mask was good enough for me. But for people that were interested in considering it, like in Florida, predominantly black and poor communities, for some reason, Ron DeSantis, who continues to fight against teaching the descendants of slave owners, grandchildren, about enslavement and its impact in America, and the fact that it's part of American history, he refused to have the access to vaccines in those poor black communities. That's not a conspiracy. That's a fact. Also, even more ironically, you had four senators from both sides, Republican and Democrat, that right after a briefing in, I think it was 2020, they decided to dump all of their stock.
Yes, I remember that. And they did an investigation, and they found out that they did it.
Yeah.
And nobody was charged. But that's illegal, isn't it? That's a crime, isn't it? And in fact, not only that, one could argue that that is an illegal action in your office. You're misusing the authority and power of your office for your own personal gain. But none of them was. I thought no one was against the law. They told me nobody was against the law. But apparently they were, huh?
The last time I saw that was like Patrick Ewing pump faking one too many times and eventually walking. You know, it's called insider trading.
Yes, it is.
Those are not, and that's not a conspiracy. That is a fact. But again, that's what happens when you want them to decide what should and should not be punished. For instance, a gag order. And that's the funny thing, because that's what they want us to believe in the narrative. And not even so much us, especially when you're, I hate to say this term nowadays, but woke. When you're awake, it means you're not asleep. And the only way to enjoy the American dream is if you are, in fact, asleep. So I have to wake up to realize what it is that I see around me. Mm-hmm. I can't allow these wicked people. I've got to pick a side. It is either God or God's adversary. And God's adversary is Satan. So therefore, I need to seek the truth, and I need to turn away and not strengthen the hands of evildoers. Because if I, in fact, am a weak man, then I am nothing but 200 pounds of flesh without a spine,
yep.
And that is nothing.
Thank you very much. We got to jump. Got another caller. By the way, if somebody wants to call, the phone number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. I'm going to add one more thing. One more thing is interesting about COVID, and that is there was a group called the Eco Health Alliance, right? And they proposed for some money, right? And in 2017, they submitted a proposal to the government, and the proposal was named the Diffuse Program. Right. And it was basically how they were going to make SARS-CoV viruses. EcoHealth Alliance submitted a request for money to take coronaviruses and make them more dangerous. Well, the short, long and short of it is they got the money. Now, in the document I'm reading, you keep finding out, this was from an investigation by Dr. Jeffrey Sachs, the Lancet group, which is one of the most respected health magazines on earth. And here's what they said when they talk about SARS-CoV-2, right? So this Diffuse program said, we need money. And we need this money because we're going to take these coronaviruses and we're going to do this to them. We're going to make them more deadly. We're going to add this, what's called the furin cleavage site, right? Which is just a protein. That'll make it more deadly. Can we get the money? 2017, they get the money. Listen to this. When the COVID came out and some people were suspicious, it says, this is from his investigation. The most striking clue for these scientists was the presence of the furin cleavage site in the SARS-CoV-2. Appearing at the exact location in the virus, the S1-S2 junction, that had been proposed in the Diffuse program. So, there is documentation that in 2017, EcoHealth Alliance submitted a proposal. We're going to take a coronavirus and we're going to take this protein right here and we're going to put it in the S1-S2 junction and that's going to make it more deadly. That's what they proposed. When SARS-CoV-2 came out, the COVID pandemic, and they looked, the protein was at the S1-S2 junction. The protein in this virus was at exactly the location that EcoHealth Alliance had said they wanted money so they could build a virus, and this exactly matched the virus that they built. They have the receipts. Now, all I'm saying is there's the evidence. Do with it what you want. I'm not saying that it's the same virus, but it's kind of weird, isn't it? That EcoHealth Alliance would say, can we have some money? We're going to take a coronavirus and we're going to stick this protein at the S1, S2 junction and it's going to make it more deadly. 2019 comes out. You got a coronavirus outbreak. And that same protein is at the S1, S2 junction. I think we could look at that and make a conclusion, but I'm not going to. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Next caller, you on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, Mike from D.C., man.
Mike, what's up, man?
You know, brother, I became very suspicious of this coronavirus the minute that Congress exempted themselves, and they said they weren't going to release the findings in 75 years. I became very suspicious of that back then. And it was really irritating when people were complaining about this, especially, I hate to say this, on black radio half the time, they were calling people anti-vaxxers, or you must be a Republican, because on the Republican side, they or conservative radio, they was talking about they didn't trust it because Congress was exempting itself. And that really offended me. And it made me, this is the reason why I'm an independent, why I don't like neither one of these parties. Because both of those parties basically use the public as guinea pigs while they got rich. And why would the public probably want to get a vote to any one of these parties after they use them for guinea pigs? Then they don't want to compensate, you know, the public after using them as guinea pigs. You know, the only person that walked away, was the people in the Republican and Democratic Party. That was the party that they didn't pay for this. Dr. Andy Fauci, this man... Man, the way how this man walked off even richer, and yet again, the American people still want to play the Democrats versus Republicans, the Democrats versus Republicans, and neither one of these parties gave a damn about you.
Can I add this, Mike?
Go ahead.
And what's interesting is the news gives us nothing. Don't you think? Why do I have to say this on WPFW? You know what I mean? Don't you think this stuff should be on the mainstream news? But the news ain't going to say a peep, are they?
The sad part about this whole ordeal, after we get finished with this conversation, it's going to make no difference.
You know what?
People are still brainwashed.
Guess what? They'll call PFW. I have not made a conclusion. I read documents from the National Institute of Health. I read documents from John Hopkins. I presented evidence. I haven't even made a conclusion. People will call WPFW and complain. Well, Garland's a crazy conspiracy. Who is he, a Trumper? He doesn't trust the government. People call it, I've had it happen where they called and complained to WPFW.
But you know, your mama, there was one senator and he was bringing out people that was having problems. I mean, these people that actually got sick, and he had scientists was trying to tell people there was something wrong with this this experimental drug. And there was a Republican senator. I can't remember his name right now. He was calling him out on that. He said, wait a minute. He said, do what you have to do, but you just got to make up your own mind. Don't trust anybody.
Let me ask you this. Problem. And just like, before I go, just like the anthrax, most people don't even know. When this anthrax went down and they said, well, yes, we think it came from Saddam and Hussein in the Middle East and blah, 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 and everybody just said, okay, most people still think that. They don't know that an investigation showed that anthrax came from Fort Detrick in Maryland, and that they said Dr. Bruce Ivins is the guy who did it. Now, they never came up with a reason. He didn't have like some history as a terrorist or nothing, some political history. We're supposed to believe that some random doctor at Fort Detrick stole some anthrax. First of all, if he handled it, it would have killed him. But forget that. He handled this anthrax. He put it in a bunch of envelopes and mailed it to various politicians and stuff, right? But it didn't kill him. Handling it will kill you. And when they said, okay, that's the guy who did it, he killed himself. Do you believe he killed himself, Mike?
No, I don't. But I got one final thing.
Okay, because I got one more caller. Last word, brother.
Just one final thing. This is a golden, I say this again, this is a golden opportunity for the third party presidential candidates to really, really make a point to really sell themselves. And they still have not really done that yet. Now, if I was a third-party presidential candidate, I would mention that, and I would go in areas that the other president can't.
And you know what happened then? Did you know this? You know what happened with Boeing and all these planes and stuff crashing and stuff, right? So one of the whistleblowers who was supposed to, I wish I'd have brought this up. One of the whistleblowers that was supposed to testify against Boeing about 4 or 5 months ago killed himself, committed suicide. Now, listen to this. A second whistleblower, just I think last week or the week before, who was supposed to testify against Boeing with all the problems with Boeing, killed himself. These people, they feel so bad that they're going to testify against Boeing for making these bad planes that crash and kill all these people that they just can't live with yourself. You know, we got a rash of suicides going here, Mike.
See, you're making a point that I'm making right now. The blow up the system part two is the third party.
Yeah. All right. But look, I got to go, brother. I appreciate the call. But we got to take some more calls. But great call. All right. Next caller. You're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hi, Garland. This is Nat, and I'm calling from Fort Meade, Maryland. And I'd like you to speak to something for me. For all of the people who passed away from the coronavirus, I never really heard anybody talk about people's property. People owned homes, I'm quite sure, and not everybody had families to take care of that business. So who ended up getting people's property?
Bottom line is, if you pass away and there's nobody to take your stuff, it goes to the state. Your estate,
okay.
Your estate, as it were. If there's no administrator, nobody lays claim to it or anything like that. Eventually, it goes to the state.
Very interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Any more callers? All right, that's it. Thanks, everybody. And I will end up, let me end up with a little rant on these college protests. I got 5 minutes or so. Here's what I have to say on that. You know, in the colleges now, these kids are getting a lesson. And they're giving us a lesson, too. You know, but what you had is this. You had kids who, the lefties, as it were, right? These kids on the college campuses. And what they were trained to be a lefty. Like, I'm an old school lefty. I'm the lefty that views politics through the lens of economic class worldwide. Yeah, you ever heard terms workers of the world unite? That's me, right? But here's what they were taught here. And this is important. And this is relative to the college protest. What the lefties in the United States empire, and this is an empire. You don't have 850 bases in your country. This is not a country. This is an empire that's trying to rule the world. Don't be naive. What the lefties in America are taught by the system, what they teach us is this. You have a pie, like the United States government every year, let's say it's a $2 trillion budget. That's the pie. And if you're a lefty in the United States, right, your job is to say, we want to make sure that a nice fat piece of that pie goes to the working class and the poor, right? So if you're a lefty in the United States, or dare I even say a socialist, a democratic socialist, whatever, in the United States, what you're trained is there's a pie of money at the end of the year. And you got to make sure that the poor people in the working class get their share, because you know the rich are getting theirs, the military, industrial, the banks, everybody, the corporations are getting theirs. Your job in America as a lefty is to make sure that the poor people and the workers get their piece of the pie. That's a lefty in America. Let me give you a little word of where the system really misleads you. They don't ever allow you to talk about how the pie was baked. See, that's what those 850 bases are. You know how it was baked? It was baked with the bodies of black folks in Africa where they stole all their resources. It was baked, cooked with the bodies of Latino people in South America where they stole their coffee and their bananas, where they took their natural resources, where Nestle's went and pumped their water and their chocolate. You see, in America, what the lefties are trained is there's a nice pie full of money and we got to divvy it up in a fair way. What they're not allowed to say is we stole that stuff. We baked the pie. The ingredients are made from stolen goods from people in Africa, people in Muslim people in the Middle East, people in Latin America, people in Asia. We put them in sweatshops. We stole their labor. We stole their natural resources. We destroyed their lives. We overthrew their government so we could get that $2 trillion. So what you're taught is, don't think about how that pie was baked or all the bodies in that pie. You just make sure that that pie is distributed and that the poor and the working class, blah, 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 get their fair slice of the pie. See, as a black person here in America, I understand. Because black folks in America was cooking the pie. And we didn't get a piece of it. We got to wash the pan afterwards. So we were colonized right here in America. American, what was it? It was stolen labor. What was slavery? It was stolen labor. It was natural resources. They went to Africa. They didn't steal bananas. They didn't steal coffee. They stole labor and brought it here and used that labor. So black folks understood that the pie was baked with stolen goods and stolen labors, and there were bodies in that pie, right? And so the people in America, the so-called lefties in America, never were allowed to talk about the pie. They never were pointed out how that pie was built on imperialism, going around the world, overthrowing governments, stealing their stuff. You don't think they overthrew the governments in Africa, they overthrew the governments in Latin America just because they didn't like the people. They did it so they could steal their natural resources. There are the United Fruit Company. Oh, I forgot. Was it Guatemala, I think? They overthrew the president of Guatemala. I think it was Guatemala. Could have the country wrong. Could be Costa Rica, but I think it was Guatemala. But I could have the country wrong. The president came in and said, look, we got lots of good farmable land here, and I want the land, the people to have the land. And let's divide the land instead of the companies having the land, instead of the U.S. company, United Fruit Company, having all the land. Let's make sure the people here got the land. So he wanted to make sure that the people in his country got a fair shot and that the U.S. didn't just steal all their land and their bananas. The U.S. government overthrew him. Overthrew him. And put a new person in that would allow them to steal. See, when we overthrow these governments around the world, it ain't for fun. It's to steal the resources of the countries. Now what's going on? Well, you think Israel is there because we like Jewish people? Israel is there because there's oil. And we need a military base to control the oil. So what's happening now? Those college students are now seeing the truth about that pie. Those college students who were blinded, who didn't see, they saw the final amount of money that was in the government. They felt their privilege from being here in the empire. They had food, they had cars, they had TV, they got all the privilege, but what they never were forced to discuss was the brutality, the viciousness, and the theft of empire that went around the world that created these bribes, these economic bribes for them to keep their mouths shut. Along comes Gaza, and they see it with their own eyes. This is what allows you to have cheap oil relatively to a lot of other places. You get new oil at a pretty good price. Why? Because we overthrowing governments in the Middle East, because we're bombing and murdering Muslim people, mistreating them, treating them like they're not human. But you don't get to see that here. You just get the cheap oil. And now these college students are getting to see the reality of imperialism, the brutality of empire, the viciousness of their government. The our government been doing that all along. 30,000 people dead, 40,000 people dead. That ain't nothing. They killed a million in Iraq. I'm not belittling the lives. I'm just saying from the brutality of the empire, 2.5 million in Vietnam, 600,000 murdered, dead Syrians. How many people we kill in Afghanistan? How many people we kill in Libya? The amount of people that are dead in Palestine, as horrific and unthinkable as it is to the U.S. empire, the Israelis are small potatoes. They ain't even learned how to do a genocide right yet compared to the United States. But it's right in front of our eyes. Finally. Finally, it's online and people can see it every day. And now these young children in college, instead of going to school and feeling the privilege of being in the empire without having to see the brutality and the violence that gives them that privilege, now they are forced to look at the brutality and the violence that gives them the privilege of living in the empire. And they don't like it. And because they're human beings, because they're basically good people, but they didn't know what their government had been doing in their name. And now when they look at their government and they say to them, hey, government, we don't like it. You know what they get? They get the same brutality. You see, because they're dealing with vicious beasts. And when they say to the Biden administration, we're Democrats, we're on your side. We voted for you. I know you're going to look out for us. He's like, Democrats? No, 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 that's for suckers. Democrats, Republicans, that's for suckers. When it comes down to it, dude, this is about money. And if you step to the U.S. government, we're going to put this here billy club upside your head and take you to jail. Yeah, but we're in Columbia University. You have to look out for us, guy. Oh, no, we don't. That's the reality of it. Garland Nixon, at Garland Nixon on Telegram, Garland.Nixon on Instagram, Garland Nixon on Facebook, and last but not least, email me. My email address is my first name and the first letter of my last name, garlandn@gmail.com. You know what? You know I love my African music. Let's go with Shwalabomb. You know, there's a great dance to this song that's like sweeping the world. Shwalabomb, a fantastic I'm a Piano song. I'm out.
Salete y yo pensé que habían resuelto mucho.
Till I said in la visit them on a good touch. But look, fries are when I won't touch. Maybe the magic that can lock. Malume naki, kopera ke six nyan. Sila tseni lapi sitse mwala kutach. Malume, fraza wena untat. Maybe the magic that can lock. Ay, ay, ay. I still bang them a chwaleni. Vimba kupin hambe no ma kwa peni. Ay, chwala ba ma peni mani. Ay, ay, ay. Yinti still bang them a chwaleni.